Hi guys, and welcome to the show. I'm so excited about today's show. In fact, I just don't know what to say. Last night I went out and I got all tattooed up. I'm ready because Azure is gonna rock your world. Hi guys, and welcome to this episode of Taste of Premier. I've got with me Ryan Berry. Ryan, how's it going, bud?
It's going well. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. And Ryan's going to talk to us today about some more Azure scenarios. I know that we've talked about Azure before, but I'm always happy to talk about, new and cool technologies that we have out there. But for people that didn't see the original episode, Ryan, can you tell us a little bit about what Azure is and why it's so cool?
Absolutely. So Azure is a great hosting environment that you can actually deploy applications or virtualized workloads. So you can actually run servers. They don't have to be Windows servers. They can be Oracle Linux. We support a number of other different distributions of Linux as well. So customers can use it as their data center in all intents and purposes. Or in the case of the platform as a service scenario, customers can build applications using Visual Studio or PHP or some other development technology. You deploy them into Azure and use the elasticity of Azure to be able to scale that application out. Now, I'll give you a very specific and pointed example. Picture Black Friday. Maybe a retailer needing massive amounts of hardware to be able to scale out their web presence to be able to accommodate the load for 1 or 2 days out of the year. Azure is very well suited to be able to, front end that load, allow the traffic to come in. The customer can turn on as many instances as they need to host their application, and then just contract it, potentially even all the way down to nothing when that load subsides. So it's a well-suited environment to be able to rapidly provision applications or servers and tear them down when they're no longer needed.
Yeah, cool. So when people think of the cloud, I know that most people by now have heard the term. If you haven't, you just have. when they think of the cloud, they think of things like email, right? Oh, well, my email's in the cloud, right? That's what they think of.
Right.
Here's what I want people to think when they think Azure. You can have a local data center. You have to buy the hardware. You have to buy the OSs. You put your OSs on your hardware locally, and you have to maintain that. So you have to have, a big room. You have to have climate control, yep. Right? Those servers physically take up space. So, that goes back to the big room. And you have to have people to manage those servers. The really cool thing about Azure is it's your data center in the cloud, right? Yep. We manage the hardware. We do all the climate control. We create the environment for you. You install the OSs that you want. You install the applications that you want on those OSs. And you have, all of the management capability that you would have even if those servers were local.
Yeah, absolutely. Good point. So things like storage area networks, firewalls, routing, wide area networks, all of those fundamentals that are required just to keep a service operational. That's all taken care of, for customers choosing Azure.
Yeah, absolutely. So you and I were talking a little bit before the show, and you had some pretty cool enterprise scenarios for using
Sure.
Azure.
Yep.
So what I think we should do is let's run through those. Let's talk about those. And I'm
Sure.
just going to let you present, and I'll ask questions if I see anything that piques my interest that I think, would be an interesting question to ask.
Sure, absolutely. So Lex, as I mentioned, we've seen a number of different, scenarios that we think are fit very well for some of our enterprise customers. There's a lot of risk-averse customers out there that think maybe the cloud, isn't secure enough to be able to host their particular, set of workloads or their application. There might be regulatory or compliance issues and so forth that they might have to be concerned about. But, Azure is can really do a lot more than maybe just trivializing it to running a virtual machine in the cloud. And some of the things I thought I'd quickly highlight that might be spark some thought-provoking ideas is using Azure as a storage repository. Think about all of the backups that you need to do for SQL servers or virtual machines or disk backups. storage is expensive, especially fast storage. And you know, the amount of data that's growing inside of a typical enterprise is exploding. You know, the period of time or retention period that you know, some customers have to abide by for financial data, as an example, is being extended in duration. You know, think about auto manufacturers, you know, have to be able to retain safety data, and being able to build out infrastructure to be able to house that is non-trivial and very expensive. Azure actually can be a well-suited platform for customers to use to be able to put those backups into, to be able to use as a data warehouse, maybe for into those massive amounts of data that is seldom accessed or infrequently accessed. And in fact, there's actually capabilities right in SQL Server that can natively back up directly into Azure. So, you know, with it wired up with your Azure subscription, set up SQL backup, and it will just, you know, automatically back up to the cloud. So, you know, data in Azure is actually stored in triplicate in a particular data center. And if a customer wanted, they can actually enable something called geo-replicated storage. And by that, what we actually do is we have a partner data center that's actually 500 miles or more away from the data center that you're storing your data in. And your data is actually stored in, six times. So you're three times in one data center and three times in another data center, providing some resiliency and fault tolerance for the information a customer wants to store. So, you know, that's a good typical, you know, enterprise type scenario. And moving on to the next one, you know, lots of customers have short-lived applications, as I mentioned, you know, the Black Friday type application or event where customers might need to, you know, or maybe a customer needs to have a viral marketing campaign, you know, or a contest that they want people to be able to enter, and they need to build out some workload or some infrastructure for that quickly and cost-effectively, and then tear it down or collapse it when it's done. You know, Azure is very well suited for those applications, as well as for developers building applications. You know, typically they need test servers to be able to prototype things, build proof of concepts, and there's, you know, real-world cost to that. You know, to be able to have the host infrastructure in place, even if those servers are virtualized, you know, there's cost and administrative burden required to keep that running. Azure is a very well-suited environment to be allow those developers just to provision their own virtual machines when they need them and tear them down when they're done.
Yeah, that's cool. So can we back up just a little bit and talk about the storage backup? You know, that first vertical that you talked about, store backup, recover your data. Geo-replicated storage. So that's a service that the customer can buy?
Yes, absolutely. So it's actually enabled by default whenever you create a storage account in Azure. And that's actually a flag, if you will, that's enabled in a storage account. The customer can actually optionally opt to inhibit that flag and actually you know, reduce their cost of storage. There is an additive surcharge if the customer wants to, you know, leverage that capability, but it, you know, it provides the customer better insulation against you know, maybe some catastrophic issue that might occur at a data center where their data happens to be stored. But yeah, that is a core capability of Azure Storage. It's
pretty cool. That seems to me like that would be a no-brainer. I mean, that's gotta add a huge, you know, peace of mind chip in the mix, right? If I've got that, I don't have to worry about my stuff. Even if the data center, you know, burns down, my stuff is safe.
Right, absolutely. So it used to be this is a passive capability that was just entirely transparent to the customer, and customers had no ability to be able to access that secondary or replicated storage. We have some new capabilities in Azure that just entered preview, actually I think last month, that allows customers to be able to access that backup data in the backup data center in a read-only manner. So customers can have DR drills or you know, business continuity drills or test the execution plan of a business continuity plan they might have put into place to be able to verify that it actually can function should a disaster strike.
Yeah, that's really, really cool. By the way, one of the things that I hear a lot is, you know, customers are concerned about security.
Right.
You know, can you speak to that?
Absolutely. So, you know, Azure is secure by design and secure by default. I know we use that mantra in the on-premises world, and the same holds true in Azure. You know, nobody in our data center would single-handedly be able to, for instance, remote desktop into a customer's VM. You know, we can't access the customer's data. You know, so the platform is designed by intentionally to be able to minimize the risk of any potential security event. And knock on wood, that's not happened to in the Azure space to any degree. And also we have a number of certifications, ISO 27001, we're FISMA certified, that allows federal government customers to actually run workloads in our clouds. There's a lot of criteria we have to abide by and protocol we have to abide by to be able to host those types of workloads. We also just recently obtained PCI DSS compliance. So all of these particular certifications are indicators that we do what we say we're going to do, that we have very regulated protocol and policies when it comes to physical access or logical access to customers' assets in Azure. So it's very secure.
Awesome. And I think we actually have some new government certifications, right, for security? Yeah.
Yep. That's the FISMA one that I was talking about, the FedRAMP that allows customers in the state and local government space to actually host workloads directly in Azure too.
Cool. All right. So let's talk about extend your infrastructure.
Yeah. So this is actually an interesting one. There's a lot of new capability in Azure. There's been some capability in Azure to date, but we have some additional new capability in Azure to be able to make this even more possible, where customers just maybe they run out of space in that physical data center they built at a particular location, and they want to provision more servers, but they want those servers to appear as though they were running in their own data center. Azure is a great vehicle to be able to do that, and customers can use things like Azure VPN to actually make a point-to-point connection or private tunnel between the customer's environment and Azure. And there's some other, really new cool capabilities, rather, that customers can use, such as MPLS networks. We have a new capability that just launched this month called ExpressRoute, where customers can actually punch a connection into an IP exchange and basically have up to a 10 gigabit pipe directly into Azure. So it's a very low latency, high speed network that customers can use as an on-ramp, if you will, for workloads they have deployed in Azure. And they can set up networks that actually are numbered the same as their on-premises environment. And these servers would appear as if they were sitting in the customer's own data center.
Cool. Yeah, that sounds pretty cool. Yeah. So So I know a lot of people have local data centers, right? And one of the concerns that I hear is, well, what about speed, right? Connectivities, speed can be as fast as you want it or as slow as you pay for, right?
I mean, right.
Yeah. So, but on our end, it's all pretty quick.
Yeah, absolutely. I had the fortunate experience to be able to visit one of our data centers, and the networking capacity is not going to be a bottleneck on our end at any of our data centers. And we have massive pipes coming in from multiple carriers, and customers can punch in with whatever size pipe they wish, to be able to make that experience as fast or as cost effective as they like.
Yeah, cost-effective was the word I was looking for.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome.
Yep. So, and then the final one, proliferation of devices, it's difficult to build applications that can target the number of devices, the numbers, form factors, and screen sizes, and device platforms, picture an application that you might want to use push notification to notify your mobile workers or your customers about some event or some initiative or marketing campaign or whatever the case may be. And typically that would require a fair amount of development effort to actually construct. Well, Azure has a number of capabilities to be able to allow customers to rapidly build applications without having to worry about what type of devices they're targeting. And push notification is a perfect example of that. The customers can use a capability called Notification Hubs to actually do that and just bolt together a bunch of other Azure capabilities into an end state application, really reducing their time to market. So, allowing them to focus on the business needs for their application instead of all the technical nuts and bolts that are needed for, carrier X, Y, or Z and device A, B, or C. So it's very well suited for those types of applications too.
Awesome. Yeah, that's really cool. I could see how this would really benefit, both small customers and large customers.
Right, absolutely. And that's exactly why I wanted to talk about some of these and just kind of provoke some thought-provoking ideas, or promote some thought-provoking ideas, rather, on ways in which maybe some customers might not have really thought about how they could use Azure.
Hey, Ryan, so I know you weren't expecting this, man, and I hate to put you on the spot, but I'm going to ask anyway. Is there any way that you could demo actually provisioning a server in Azure from start to finish?
Absolutely. Let's give it a whirl. So this is actually what the Azure portal looks like. I'm logged into a subscription. I've got a number of different test applications that I've been working on deployed into it. But let's say you just want to build a server, for testing purposes, and maybe deploying some SharePoint workload or SQL workload or what have you. It's literally as simple as going to the pane here on the left, going to virtual machines, going to go create virtual machine, and I'm going to click on from gallery. And that you can actually see all of the different operating system flavors that are available for you to choose from. Some of them actually have server software pre-installed on it. So for instance, a server with SharePoint installed, or servers with SQL installed. And in fact, actually, there's a huge benefit to customers of using some of those particular images, and that licenses are included. So if a customer wants to build some enterprise scale application and maybe is paying by the drink for licenses that they have in their on-premises world, they can use Azure as a way to be able to cost effectively stand up an application and just essentially rent a license from us. And you can see here there's other operating system flavors such as Ubuntu, Scent, and SUSE Linux, as well as Oracle. Oracle's recently announced a partnership with us whereby they directly support Oracle running in Azure, inclusive of many of their other products and capabilities such as Oracle WebLogic and so forth. So there's a number of images that you can pick here. Again, some actually have licenses included. For instance, if you pick Oracle on Windows, it actually has Oracle licenses included, and customers are basically paying for that by the hour. Let's just go ahead and pick Windows Server. And I'm just going to pick a Windows Server 2012 data center and hit Next in our wizard and give it some sort of name, Taste of Premier Test. And it looks like I have to reduce the number of characters, and it looks like that particular machine name is available. This is actually going to be the DNS name I'm going to use to connect to my machine, and I'm just going to go ahead and make it an extra small.
Hang on just a second. Could you pull that list down again?
Sure, absolutely. That's a good area to focus on. These are the size VMs that you can actually provision, and this has to do with the number of CPUs that are available in that particular server, as well as the amount of memory that particular machine has, and there's some additional sizes that aren't depicted on this list, A8 and A9, that are actually used for like high throughput computing workloads. So picture a pharmaceutical company that maybe wants to spin up a big HPC cluster to do genetic analysis for some experiment that they ran. This is a great way to be able to do that and leverage some pretty massive size compute instances. You just provision them all up in Azure, run their experiment and tear them all down when they're done.
Yeah, so that's really cool. So you can do extra small, medium, large, and then some of the other sizes, right? A5, yep. A6, A7, all the way up to A9. Here's a question for you. So let's say that I decide initially that I want to go small, right? Mm-hmm. But then, my needs grow. So is there a way to change it on the fly?
Not on the fly, but you can change it. So there's some steps you have to follow through, but you can change it. You're not fixed with that particular machine size. And that's actually customers have two options of scaling up and increasing the size of that VM, maybe the amount of memory and number of cores, or they can just add more instances. They can put them all behind a singular IP address, and we'll load balance traffic across all those servers. So customers have kind of two options there to be able to handle, capacity bottlenecks they might run into.
Oh, that's really cool. So we will automatically do load balancing if needed.
Yep. So if I actually make this part of what's called an availability set, you can have two or more servers as part of that availability set. And actually, when customers do that, that's when we actually turn on our SLA. So when customers have two or more servers running in Azure, that's when we guarantee them 99.95% connectivity uptime. But when we do that, all those servers are living behind a single public IP address. We'll distribute traffic across however many instances a customer has up.
Wow, that's really cool. Okay, sorry to interrupt. Keep going.
Yeah, no problem. That's a good question. So I guess I'll go ahead and just pick small. I'll give it a username and a password, and go ahead and click next. And this is actually where I talked about being able to make this part of an existing availability set, or if I had a virtual network, for instance. So when I talked earlier about ExpressRoute or VPN, where I can actually assign the server an IP address that matches the IP numbering that I use in my own data center or my own network. This is actually where you can define all those characteristics. So you can see by default it has this 10-dot small 10-dot network. And this is actually the storage account. This is where I talked about earlier, where you can actually enable that geo-replication to actually provide some resilient and fault tolerance. The storage accounts are also used under the covers for VMs. So in this case, I can actually have this particular virtual machine request generate its own storage account under the covers to be able to house however many VHDs that I want to add to this machine. Because recall that all this particular wizard is doing is provisioning a virtual machine with the operating system installed. If I want to install or create data drives to be able to house SQL or install Oracle onto, I can actually I have to create those VHDs myself, and then I can attach them to that storage account that I create. So that's the customers can upload a VHD with data already on it. They can create an empty one and use it for the application they install. So a lot of different ways customers can use that. And this is the availability set that I talked about. So by default, this is going to be set to none, and this is just going to be basically a single standalone server just dangling out on the internet, and with no load balancing or anything happening with it. So if I go ahead and hit next, and this is a great segue into an earlier topic around security. So one of the really cool things about Azure, in my opinion, is that I think Azure's freaking awesome, overall. But this is actually a really cool thing from a security standpoint, is that we only direct traffic to the customer's environment that the customers expressly indicated they want routed to their particular instance. And this holds true for applications deployed into Azure, in this case, this is a server. So you can see remote desktop is enabled by default, as well as PowerShell. So if, for instance, somebody starts throwing a bunch of port 80 traffic at this particular server, it will never even make it to my server. So it's going to be cut off directly by our load balancers in the Azure data center, and that traffic won't ever even hit my server's network card. So this is really cool. And customers can also create rules around this. They can create ACLs, so they can say, well, if this particular, I want to allow port 80 traffic, but only from this range of IP addresses. And again, that's actually done at the data center level, that we won't actually even let that traffic make it to your server unless those rules are met.
Yeah, that's really cool. So I see PowerShell there. What's mm-hmm. what's that all about?
So PowerShell allows me to remotely invoke PowerShell commandlets to be able to manage these servers. So if you've got wanted to use PowerShell to maybe script out the creation of a fairly large server environment, you can actually use it to be able to manage targeted instances within that collection of servers. So it's a management port basically that's enabled to allow PowerShell to work remotely.
So what you're doing here is actually just enabling ports so that certain applications can talk to these servers.
Yep, absolutely. And these are the default ones, and I can actually nix the default ones and make that would probably be less than ideal, because especially remote desktop, because I would never even be able to connect to this particular server. But I can add additional services or reduce them.
Yeah, that's really cool. Are there some other values in the list, or do you just type your own there?
Yep, so you can type your own. There's some well-known ports and services that are listed here, SMTP and HTTP and so forth, but you can also just enter some port and indicate what port it actually uses.
Okay, that's cool.
Yep. And this is actually this is worth highlighting and mentioning too. This is a brand new capability that was just launched, I think about 2 weeks ago. This VM agent. So this actually is going to be a vehicle that we're going to introduce a lot of functionality on in the future. And initially, it's not very exciting. One of the things that you can actually use this for is to be able to run background info. So, you know, the SysInternals tool that actually creates a wallpaper that shows you the machine name, how much memory it has, how many cores, all of that sort of stuff, it allows you to actually, you know, kind of think of it maybe as a remote invocation tunnel to be able to push things down onto your instances deployed in Azure. And, you know, BG Info is you know, the first of such services, and there's going to be a lot of new capability that we're going to be able to use that VM agent for. So think of it as just some software that's running on that server. And it's going to allow things to, like, think about a password reset. You saw in the earlier step, my wizard, I had to type in administrator username and password. What if I forget it? But now I can't access my server, and if it's not domain joined, I'm sort of out of luck. So, yeah. You know, but I have administrative access to my subscription, so you know, I can, and, you know, maybe it's perhaps in the future initiate a command to the server to actually remotely reset my password.
Yeah.
So I hit OK here, and it literally is starting to provision my server, and you know, within a couple minutes time, I'll be able to remote desktop in and. You know, actually use this. So I can actually go in here and see, you know, there's only one VHD or one, you know, hard drive attached to this particular VM. You see it's running a Windows OS, but I can actually go in here and create another VHD that I can actually attach to this virtual machine. And that's, you know, our earlier step of the wizard where we're actually picking a VM machine size. The size of the VM that you go with also dictates how many VHDs you can attach. So, you know, our largest VM size allows you to attach 16 1-terabyte drives. So you can actually have 16 terabytes of storage on one server running in Azure.
That's really cool.
Yep. So let's see. It's it'll probably take a bit here to actually get it to a point where we can actually connect to it. But that's okay. Really all there is to it.
Yeah, that's cool. Let's let it. Are we going to let it provision?
Yeah. We can see if it comes quickly here, and we can go ahead and just connect right into it and add it.
So what are some of the other tabs you've got there? I see you've got virtual machine instances and then images and disks.
Yep. So this is actually where customers can actually create an image themselves, so they can actually upload, you know, maybe if they have some sys-prepped image with, you know, a bunch of software, maybe middleware components and so forth that are needed for the types of applications they put in Azure, they can actually upload a sys-prep VHD image, and they can actually use that as a template for servers they create in the cloud. So that, you know, they're not, you know, in other words, they don't have to just use the ones that are in our gallery. They can actually, you know, bring their own images forward and actually use that as a template or cookie cutter.
Wow.
And the disks actually just shows, you know, the actual individual, you know, drives attached to my my particular, you know, running VM.
Yeah. So what's really cool about this, I think, is that, you know, I could start a company tomorrow. I wouldn't have to invest in hardware. I could build my entire infrastructure, my entire corporate infrastructure out in the cloud in Azure. And it also kind of, you know, a lot of companies today have this bring your own device mantra. And, you know, as long as they have an RDP client, it sounds like really they could do anything that they needed to do.
Yep, you got it. That's correct. Yeah, and in fact, you know, Azure is actually used by a lot of startups for that very reason. You know, for the capital expenditure in building out the physical data center and power and cooling, all of that stuff that's needed. You know, let us be the experts in that, and you know, you be the expert in your application that you want to put into Azure.
Cool. Hey, Ryan, it looks like it's done.
Yeah. It sure is. So I can actually connect to it literally by clicking on connect, and this will actually allow me to download RDP file to connect directly up to it. And when I open up that particular RDP file, lo and behold, I can log in using the username and password that I supplied when I created it. And you can see I have a server running in the cloud.
Wow, that's really cool. So what are we looking at here? Is that actually your desktop?
Yep. So this is actually you know, the server manager that actually.
Oh yeah. Now I see it. Yeah.
Yep.
That's awesome. Yep. So we started that about, 15 minutes into the podcast? I think we're close to a half hour here. So in 15 minutes, you set up, provisioned, and attached to a server that you built on the fly in the cloud.
Yep, you got it.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. So if I'm a customer and I want more information about Azure, is there a good place that you can reference? Is there a website or something like that you'd like to recommend?
Sure. I actually, in all honesty, the best place to go is WindowsAzure.com. There's lots of content and material. There's resources and virtual training that is available. That's probably the single best spot to go as a starting point. You can also create a trial account to be able to experiment with this free of cost or free of charge for 30, I can't recall if it's 30 or 90 days. Some period of time you're actually able to use it for free.
Wow. So you know what? That's awesome. Thank you so much for doing this, because I really feel like this has been the best Azure demonstration that I know we've had on the show and that I've ever seen. This is awesome.
Yep, no problem. Happy to do that.
Before I let you go, though, before we started filming today, you mentioned that you had some cool devices that you wanted to show us as well. So now's your chance.
Absolutely. So this is kind of the geek factor here of the show, and what I actually have here is this very small embedded microcontroller that actually is running on this particular board right here, and I've got a touch screen hooked up to it that looks like it's restarting because my USB power cord actually dropped. But the cool thing about this is that this is actually, this has an Ethernet cable attached to it. And this particular device is about $120, and it's actually running .NET Compact. So you can actually build and deploy applications on this using Visual Studio, C#, VB.NET. And this particular device, I have it connected directly to Azure. So this is actually pushing temperature information of my office into a queue that I have running in Azure, and I have some servers running in Azure that actually peels data out of that queue and pushes it into a SQL database in Azure. And then I have a web application that I can report upon it. So it's just an end-to-end example. The point being is that you can have something very, very, very small that potentially doesn't have very much computing power that's able to actually communicate directly with services in Azure and use it to record information or even allow Azure to remotely control it. Think about thermostats in your house, Nest thermostats or some of the smart thermostats and home automation products that are out there. Think about all the different, the services allow you to remote start your car or monitor where your vehicle's at. All of those devices need some receptacle to be able to either store logging information or to allow customers to be able to remotely control it. And Azure's got some really cool capability to do that. And this is just one example of that.
That's really cool. That's awesome. I can't see it from where I'm at, but I'm sure that the end users can.
Yep. So this is actually it's just got a little message on it saying that it's actually uploading the oops, looks like I just bumped my power cord again. But anyway, it's uploading the temperature to directly into Azure. So something with a 72 megahertz processor in it and 256K of RAM is actually able to talk directly to Azure.
That's so cool. Man, I love our technology.
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome company.
I agree.
All right. Well, listen, thanks again. I love having you on. I think that was a great demo. And for the guys out there watching the podcast, visit the website. That's the best place to go to get more information about Azure. Thanks for watching. And that's your taste of Premiere. And Mom, I didn't really get tattoos.